Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, author Angela Terry talks about her novel, Charming Falls Apart, with Olivia Betty and Katie Mickelson, members of the Chicago Council of the American Writers Museum. This conversation originally took place January 27, 2021, and was recorded live via Zoom. Throughout this episode, you'll hear references to Angela's new novel, which is now available. The novel is called The Trials of Adeline Turner, and on February 17th, we will host another live online program with Angela to discuss this new novel and the craft of writing. This program is free to attend, though donations are encouraged to support our youth education initiatives. You can learn more about the book and register for the event online at AmericanWritersMuseum.org/calendar. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Welcome, everyone joining us all over the country, I believe. I'm Olivia Betty, and with me is my co-host, Katie Mickelson. We're both partners at Chicago law firms in the city. I'm a partner at Neil Gerber Eisenberg, and Katie's a partner at Bierman. We are both leaders in the Chicago Council for the American Writers Museum, and we're so thrilled that you're going to join us tonight for a former big law attorney turned author, my good friend Angela Terry, who has just debuted her first book, Charming Falls Apart. Angela, welcome, and we're so thrilled that you're here.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. It's fun to virtually visit Chicago this evening.
Absolutely. And with that, before we start, let's raise our almond latte coffee martinis or wine if you have it. Thank you, Allison James from Charming Falls Apart, who loves to drink. All right, as I mentioned, Allison James, our heroine of the book. How did you choose her? She's not a lawyer like us. She's in PR. I mean, I don't know how you make that leap. Like, did you have to do a lot of research into PR? The PR world is really different.
Yeah, you know, it's because before I wrote this book, I wrote another one about a lawyer, and that book didn't go anywhere. So it's like, well, I think I'm going to write another book.
Are you calling it
something different? So I gave her the job of PR. And, you know, it's funny, I actually didn't do much research on it. I just kind of, you know, winged it and just kind of hoped for the best. But, you know, I wanted to make her someone who was kind of like, she's kind of an every girl. You know, that was kind of my vision for her. And I wanted her to be in a job that was kind of lively and very extroverted, because the situation she finds herself in is, you know, she kind of loses everything. She loses, you know, it's not just her fiance and her job, but it's also her squad. And so for her, you know, that's a very difficult thing. And so the inspiration for Allison actually came about, I was at a bachelorette party, and there was one woman there, and she was just one of those people who you look at them and you think, oh, that person has it all together. Like, you know, the rest of us were a mess, but she's got it all together. But then we were talking, and she was saying how, you know, she has this job, she's good at her job, but she doesn't like love her job. But at the same time, she just doesn't have like a passion or something, you know, that she really wants to be, you know, something else that she really wants to be doing. And I was like, that's kind of interesting. Because yeah, like when you're in that position, like what do you do? It's like, you just kind of keep doing the thing that you're good at and succeed in that. But even if you're not super fulfilled. And so she was actually the person who gave me the idea for Allison.
Dumped at the altar?
Oh, that I just threw in there. Yeah, that's where the fiction comes in. You know, you gotta amp up the stakes. So I thought, okay, well, you know, if someone like this, like, what if they had no choice but to, you know, like change their life? And so here Allison is, you know, the book opens up with her, you know, her fiance, you know, is like, I'm in love with somebody else. So that's over. And then, you know, she loses her job that same day, and, you know, that's done. And then she finds out, like, you know, her friend, like her fiance has been sleeping with her maid of honor. So no more best friend there. Her other friend is this woman she works with and who just kind of ghosts her when everything goes down. And so, yeah, so here's a person who, you know, she needs to completely build up her life again, like relationship, work, and, you know, she needs to get some better friends. Yeah.
Except for the one, the lawyer. She's wonderful.
Yes, because lawyers are wonderful, right?
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about that fiance. I call him the douchebag.
Yeah.
Who was there inspiration for Neil?
There was no inspiration, really. I think he's just, you know, he's just a guy. He's just, I purposely made him very vague and basic. I didn't spend too much time describing him. I'll let people imagine, like, whatever their terrible ex looked like. They could just imagine him being Neil.
We are probably all know somebody like that. So,
right. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, that was left to the reader's imagination.
I just picture him in like pleated khakis and a polo shirt. And I love the description where he likes to watch sports more than play
right,
them.
Yeah. He doesn't have much going on. Allison was better off without him.
Definitely. But he wasn't modeled after an ex-boyfriend of yours or anything.
No. Yeah. So I should say, like, all characters are fictional. But I will say, though, one time, you know, so Allison, though, she my inspiration also is sort of like Lincoln Park, Gold Coast, you know, just people like I knew, you know, when I lived there and stuff. And when I was writing the book, it was funny. I was at a Treasure Island, the grocery store, which I don't think is there anymore. And there was this girl at the salad bar who looked exactly like Allison while I was writing her. She had the baseball cap, the blonde ponytail, and her Lululemons. And I was like, there she is. That's my Chicago Allison.
Oh my gosh. What if you were like, this is you?
Yeah, I know. I kind of wanted to, but you know, didn't want to be creepy. So.
Yeah. Well, then how about Jordan? Was she modeled after you or one of your friends from one of your law firms?
Yeah, I'd say like Jordan is me, like sort of the B character a little bit. So, you know, that friend who's kind of, you know, so I kind of put in my own sort of feelings about litigation and having no control over your life sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of Jordan's situation. And, you know, but she's also in a similar thing where she is, you know, she's good at what she does, but she's not quite sure if it's really for her. You know, she just has kind of reached a certain level and is also, we don't learn till later, she's been rethinking her life too and kind of living vicariously through Allison's, you know, self-discovery journey. Jordan is that friend who really, you know, sticks around, who, you know, when things are bad, like she will be there for you. She will be the one who's like, you know, proposes ridiculous things like, you know, we're putting on our wedding dresses, we're going, you know, a signature room, we're getting drunk.
That was the best.
Yeah. So she's her best sidekick.
That was.
And what did you think about her being tied to her phone? I mean, how did that come up in terms of, is that all of us, right?
That is all of us. I mean, come on. it's your lifeline. And I mean, mm-hmm. kind of, it's like the only reason you can be out of the office is because you have your phone. So mm-hmm. you know, be reached. And at the end of the day, you know, it's a client business. So, you know, need to be available.
I mean, you clearly had that experience because you wrote her so well. I mean, just the way she's like, my client. And there's no thing as a weekend off. I mean, Katie rushed here from the office or from work just to get here, but she's a good friend and she's not going to miss this. And she's like, I got to get there, which is how Jordan is. And so I really, you know, related to her. I liked her a lot. So thank you for writing her.
Oh, yeah, I think we all can. I think we all can relate. And actually, funny anecdote. I thought I couldn't find my phone, and then I found it. I found it in the snow. So all of us who are lawyers and really depend upon our phone, that something was like the ultimate nightmare of me. So,
And how about Stacy then? I mean, Stacy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So you're evil.
Oh yes, that's why she has an E in her name, actually. Because I know like the sweetest person named Stacy, and she might be watching this evening, but she doesn't have an E in her name. So I let her know when you read the book, she has, you know, she's evil Stacy. That's why she's an E in the name. So you know, Jordan, Stacy, and Kate, they all kind of represented different types of friendships in the book. I used to be a philosophy major. And so Aristotle says that there are three types of friends. You know, you got your friends of utility, friends of pleasure, and friends of value. And so, you know, Kate is a friend of utility because it's someone she worked with, you know, and that kind of put a certain power dynamic, you know, in place for their friendship because they worked together. And so Kate couldn't always be that friend that she wanted to be. Stacy, I would say Stacy is a friend of pleasure. You know, they did very, you know, they were friends, but they kind of did very shallow activities together. You know, they brunched, they got mani-pedis, you know, they shopped together. And Stacy was really someone who I wanted to represent like a holdover of Allison's old life. So Stacy, someone who, you know, Allison went to school with in high school, and they rekindled their friendship later. So they have the shared history. But she's also that, you know, that frenemy. I don't know if anyone's ever had a frenemy, but, you know, I wanted it to be a little bit, you know, Stacy's someone who's a little unhappy with her life. She used to be a queen bee, and now she's a little unhappy, and she's a little petty and jealous of Allison. And so their friendship was never going to be, it was never going to last. Mm-hmm. Whereas Jordan and Allison, they are a friendship of value, because they, you know, Jordan, they're both super loyal to each other. I mean, Allison would also do anything for Jordan. And so, you know, they just have these shared values. And, you know, as you get older, I know this is something I've experienced, but I feel like as you get older, you kind of realize like the friendships that last, like age doesn't matter, shared activities doesn't matter. What kind of matters are shared values in a way. And so I wanted Jordan to be that kind of friend. Like Jordan will be, they will be together forever.
I love that. I didn't know about the three different kinds of friends, but I'm like thinking about it right now and like, boom, 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 you know, perfect. Well, going back to Stacy with the evil E though, that scene with the blonde hair on the towel, terrible. How did you come up with that?
So, well, I'm glad you felt that. Cause yeah, that was, it was hard to write even. I felt so bad for Alice.
I did too. I mean, you could just feel her rage and she went, you know, running around her condo, you know, tearing things up. I mean, I thought that was really cool the way you put that in there and just how you came up with that. And
that's why I also, at the end, I had her buy new dishes and new sheets because it's almost like you just don't want anything someone else touched. I don't know.
No, that was awesome. And then how about Eric, the coffee shop guy?
He's financially stable. He's got goals. He's emotionally mature. He's so open. I mean,
he's ideal.
Yeah, I know. So he is a work of fiction. I mean, even we can aspire to be Eric. You know, I feel like he's someone, you know, just someone with a very level head. And I wanted, you know, so the way the book was originally written, it didn't have, you know, in early drafts, it didn't really have like that romance element. Like I had them more as friends. And so they were kind of just more friends who, you know, and then at the end, it's kind of like, oh, you kind of realize, you know, we like each other. And so, you know, with Jordan, you know, that's like a friend like who, you know, she tells her the truth and everything. But I think sometimes like just having a stranger's perspective is helpful. And so for Allison, I wanted her to have that stranger's perspective, and I wanted it to be someone who, I mean, he doesn't pull any punches. Like he doesn't let her be a victim. He, you know, I mean, he's there for her, but he's also like, you need to get out of this condo. You know, you need to volunteer. Like you need to do things. Like you can sit around reading books all the time, but you need to actually go out and do things. And that's how you're going to get out of this funk.
And is CrossFit a part of your life? I mean, because he's, you know, do you have a box that you go to or the
I did for a little while. Yes, I am. I wasn't very good at it, but I loved it. Yeah, so I used to go to a box in the Presidio. And it is, oh my gosh, that is an intense workout. So I don't know if you guys have done CrossFit. Okay, it's very intense. It's like a cult. But it's an amazing workout. But for me, it kind of didn't go along with my marathon training because it's like a lot of muscle building and I'd just be running and I'm like, my arms are so heavy. but I did do it for a little while and it's a really great workout.
Do you prefer, like, so when you're developing characters, are you thinking about those characters? Like, would you prefer to base them on real personal experiences, or is it preferable for you to kind of come up with kind of a hybrid, or like what makes it easier for you to develop the characters that you're developing in your stories?
Sure.
Just because, you know, a lot of us have images in our mind. We always talk about, like, for example, you know, we always have names that we have associations with. And we always think, like you mentioned the Stacy, you're like, oh, you know, I know. And I inserted an E. And I'm always curious in a writer's mind, if it's easier to go off of because you would think it would be easier to create things from the air. But is it, do you think it's more, as a writer, do you think it's more valuable to draw on personal experiences and infuse that, or just to kind of create something on your own?
Sure. I think, you know, it's actually easier to create something on your own, but you draw from emotional experiences. And so, like I was saying, none of these characters are based on real life. The only real life person in the book is I did actually see a psychic astrologer magician. So the craziest person in the book is actually the only real person in the book. But yeah, I think it's like, you kind of decide what type of story you want to tell. And like, for example, you know, Allison, I mean, I call her basic, you know, she doesn't want, you know, she doesn't have like these big goals or crazy dreams. Like, she just wants to be happy and she can't figure out what the problem is. And I actually looked up names, like what were popular names when she was born, and the name Allison came up. And so that's how I ended up naming her. And I did give her my middle name, though, Marie, because it just sounded nice. But yeah, all the names, it's very strange. I don't know how I come up with names. It's just a very weird, like a name just pops in my head. Like, I actually don't know a single person named Neil. I know a lot of Kates, and they're all very different. and yeah, I don't know. Jordan, I don't know. That's just a name I think I like. And that came up. But yeah, I think it's like, for me, I try to figure out what the story is that I want to tell. And then the characters represent each of those things. Yeah. You know, so it's almost like, and so in this book, I would say, you know, a lot of stories are plot driven. And frankly, there's kind of not a lot of plot in this book. So it's more about her inner journey. And so the characters are the ones driving the story.
I love it. And I mean, whenever I read about Allison running, though, it just made me think of you, because clearly her running passion comes from you. I mean, how many marathons have you run now?
I think I've only done 7. So.
Only 7. Only 7. For those of us who don't
remember. I might have done 8. I can't remember.
How many of those were the Chicago Marathon?
Those are all the Chicago Marathon. Okay. I only run Chicago. It's flat.
And it's your favorite city, and you're running through your home. And would you like to like share with everyone their story about the marathon and running for PAWS and everything?
Sure. Yeah. So in the book, the way I connected with Allison is I actually gave her, she has my workout schedule. So Tuesdays, Thursdays are your short runs, and then Saturdays are your long runs, because you're usually training for something. And so, yeah, so that was kind of, because Allison and I are very different. And so that was my way to kind of connect with her, is give her, you know, this running identity. And, you know, I feel too, as a runner, when I don't run, I don't feel like myself. And so for Allison, when she doesn't run, like running is how she kind of gets back to herself and realizes things are important to her. And yeah, so I run for PAWS Chicago, and PAWS Chicago is the Midwest's largest no-kill shelter. And my brother and sister-in-law have a PAWS rescue named Louie, and he is the most adorable beagle mix. And so I always run for him, and he's my little mascot. And yeah, so I've run for them for 4 years now. And I'm signed up for Chicago Marathon this year and plan to run to raise money for them again. And so that was a theme in the book. You know, I didn't want to put PAWS in there just because that would have been a little too on the nose there. So I kind of gave her another event, which is, you know, Girls Run It, which is sort of a play on Girls on the Run. Mm-hmm. And you know, because she realizes that my brother just texted me, like, Louie, woo, woo.
Hi, brother.
Up on my screen. You know, she realizes that the things she really liked about her job were the community projects, mm-hmm. things she did, you know, that was out the community outreach. And so, you know, when she sees this, you know, Girls Run It, she's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to kind of get back to that. And that kind of sets her more on course for what she wants to do, which is pairing corporate corporations and community outreach, like matching them together for sponsorships. And so that was kind of my own, yeah, my own little.
You're so amazing. And just so you guys know, how amazing. So she's been, you know, raising money for PAWS every year, running the marathon for it. And we actually met in the 2018 marathon in the bathroom line at the Congress Hotel before the Chicago Marathon. And we had been like 10 years since we'd seen each other, because we were associates at Jenner and Block in 2008. She moved to San Francisco, joined a different law firm. And, you know, we were on Facebook, you know, just kind of kept in touch over, you know, 10 years. And then I see her in the bathroom line and we chatted. And so that was my first marathon. And so the next year we made plans to meet in the bathroom line before the marathon. And she has a broken back. She literally has a broken back and planned to run the marathon. We ran the first half of the marathon together. She kept saying, oh, go ahead. You know, I got a broken back. I'm going to go really slowly. And she was going my pace. So she was actually like my rep. She was my pacer. And she helped me get through the first half of the marathon. It was incredible. But she is a beast.
Thanks, Olivia. I don't think I would have run that first half if it wasn't for you. So yeah, I felt really bad. I was like, I'm slowing her down.
She like kept me going. And that's how we found out about the book. Cause I was like, so what's new with you? And she tells me about Charming Falls Apart. And we make these elaborate plans to have this incredible party at the museum this October. But we'll have to do another one for your next book, right?
That sounds amazing. Yes. Oh. Can't say too much yet, but stay tuned. Watch my website.
We'll definitely stay tuned. And so as we were running through Chicago, the marathon, we went through like so many neighborhoods and so many spots. And you could tell that this book really was almost like a love story to Chicago. Can you tell us about your inspirations for the different spots in your book?
Sure. Yeah. So I used to live in the Gold Coast and my brother and sister-in-law still live there. And so that was my inspiration for, you know, where Allison lives. And yeah, I've been in San Francisco since 2008, but since my family lives there, you know, I visit probably twice a year. And I usually stay downtown in the Gold Coast. And, you know, like, I just miss Chicago. So, I mean, I love San Francisco. Like, I mean, the weather here is beautiful, the hills, wine country, everything. But I just like, there's just a certain liveliness and, you know, neighborhood and community aspect of Chicago that I kind of miss. And so I kind of put Allison in, I put her in my old condo in the Gold Coast. And so I kind of based all of the places around there. And so I used a lot of real places. So it was kind of my way to like virtually visit Chicago. And, you know, cause I got to like look up places and describe them, like, you know, the Restoration Hardware, that beautiful, you know, restaurant with the chandelier, and, you know, the Starbucks in the Gold Coast, the Cauldron is 100% made up. I wish it existed. So I thought if I had to do a dream coffee shop, it would be the Cauldron. And I sort of made it a little bit like Third Coast Cafe. If anyone's so on Dearborn, right next to Restoration Hardware.
Well, you couldn't have picked out better places. I think everybody wants to go to those places. I mean, in the Viagra Triangle, I mean, certainly everybody knows that's a Chicago special, right?
Yes.
Is it hard to write about those places not being in Chicago? Do you go off memory? Is it a lot of it like about feeling and what are you doing when you're addressing those places? Because there's some very specific places that you hit on, you know, Grant Park, Spiaggia, certain things like that. And I think all of us, especially I kind of resonate with you because I always think about, should we move away from Chicago? You know, you think about the weather and you think about, but then a lot of these institutions bring us back here. I mean, they're very, and their personal experiences. So do you draw on those personal experiences and then just try to, you know, when you're coming up with these ideas, like how does that work in terms of your head?
Totally. I think it's places, you know, I mean, sitting at Maple and Ash, like I could just see the booth. You know, I've like met up with my brother. My brother-in-law, James, also lives in Chicago. And so I've met up with him there. Nico Asteria, I never know if I pronounce it right, but I hang out in the bar there. Restaurant is amazing. I mean, like the Gold Coast just has like so many great restaurants in the location, you know, like in this very small part of town. But what was really interesting writing the book is, you know, I mean, the book, by the time I handed it to my publisher, there 2 years went by. And so a lot of places changed, one of which would be after the book was already printed, but not in stores yet, I learned the Barnes & Noble had just closed. on State Street. So that was quite the bummer, but will live forever in my book, because my book takes place in 2019. and yeah, like even like little things, the Williams-Sonoma that used to be, I always saw it on Michigan Avenue. Then I realized it was gone and had moved over to Lincoln Park. And so I was like, okay, now Allison needs to get a car and she needs to drive over to Lincoln Park. And yeah, so I had to, you know, and also I originally, there was this place called the Boarding House that used to have like this big chandelier with wine bottles, and that's no more. And so, yeah, I really had to do, like right before it was going to final print, I kind of had to do just like a check to make sure is everything in the right place. And at that last minute, I was texting my brother and sister-in-law. I'm like, is this still there? Like, where are people going now? Like, what are the best like roof deck bars? Yeah.
What's fun about it though is that, and I think everybody on this call webinar can relate, is that it's all pretty much gone in terms of our ability to enjoy these places, to kind of, again, bring back images of places that we were so used to going and enjoying. It's nice because it transports us back to like a somewhat of a more of a real normal, as we say in air quotes now, like what is normal. But the idea of that kind of normal experiences we used to have, and it makes you, I mean, it's comforting, right? There's like a feeling of familiarity, which feels good. I think everybody, especially like it's so timely with COVID and everything, people feel so, they want to go out, they want to be part of communities, and they want to be able to do what they used to do with places that they know. So, I mean, I just think it's a fun reminder about how amazing Chicago is, and hopefully it kind of gets back to that way. So
it really is. I mean, the way you wrote about, you know, kind of the after work happy hour when she meets up with Jordan and like she slings her stuff down and hangs her coat under the bar and they hang out and they're getting drinks. I mean, that was normal for all of us.
That was absolutely normal. My like Wednesday, yeah. Thursday, Friday, right. Night, Tuesday.
We took it for granted. Yeah. And now, you know, we're going to be so grateful for those days when we can do those things again, those very social, packed bar, busy restaurant kind of thing. But you said something that I'd never considered. As a writer, when you are, you know, writing your book, do you have to choose like, okay, am I going to encapsulate this book in a certain point of time? Like you said, this is a 2019 book. Or do you say, okay, I'm going to try to make this vague so it's a book that could be at any point in time? Is that something that you have to consider as an author and go with it?
It is. And I'm glad I'm not writing a contemporary book right now for 2020. But yes. So, you know, especially if you're going to put places in like real time places, then I think, you know, you do want to put it in a certain time period. And it was interesting. So the writing process of this, you know, it takes place in a very short time period. I think it's like May to end of September, maybe. But I had a calendar out for 2019. And so I actually calendared each chapter and each scene, so I knew which day things were happening. And I kind of had to do that because I knew what I wanted her birthday to be. And when she was getting married, so I had to like work from there. And I knew what her workout schedule was. So I needed to know which Saturday she was doing her long run. Yeah, so you definitely have to think about timing of everything. And sometimes when you're writing too, you can, you know, when the book is all done and you can kind of go back and then layer in the time periods. Yeah, like fix, you can go back and fix that.
Is kind of on that line, do you work or do you write in a linear fashion? Do you go back and like when you're writing, I'm always fascinated by writers about whether they do from start to finish and then they fill in the holes, or do they do start, end, middle? Like I always find it fascinating because sometimes, you know, when you read books, you always kind of think, okay, they knew the ending all along. So the question is, do they write the ending before and then fill in everything to make the ending make more sense? And I think every author probably is a little bit different, every writer.
Yeah. So, you know, in the writing world, we call them plotters and pantsers. Plotters are people who outline their book. And so before they start writing, and so they know like what, they have a general framework of what they're going to do. Then there are people called pantsers, and the pantsers write by the seat of their pants. And so they, I am a pantser. I just start writing. Like I have a little idea in my head or a character or something. And then I just start writing to see where it goes. And then, you know, if I'm writing it and I feel like, hey, this is something, I just keep going till the end. And so it's that first really horrible, rough first draft that you just don't show anybody ever. Like no one ever sees that. And then once you kind of have that big, messy first draft, you can kind of go back and figure out like what worked, what didn't work. And that's when you kind of like, what you were saying, like you start moving things around. And if there's any aspiring writers or writers on this call, Scrivener is a great, great software for this. You can basically put your book into Scrivener and it has like note cards. And so you put each of your scenes on these note cards and then you can kind of move the note cards around, just like you would kind of do in real life. But it's way better because that's on your computer and then you can import it back to Word. So that's what I do. I kind of write the first messy draft and then reorganize everything and then go from there. And the funny thing is as a lawyer, I used to pants too, and I would drive people crazy because I just can't write with an outline. And people would be like, well, let me just see that one section. It's like, no, I don't know. Like, I have to write the whole thing first, and then you can see it. Because I wouldn't know what my strongest argument was until it was all written out.
That's so, I'm going to tell her about Scrivener with a V or a B?
Scrivener, yeah.
Scrivener, okay.
With a V.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing your writing handwriting, or are you doing computer? Are you doing everything on computer? Are you doing any handwriting?
You know, sometimes I do just because it's fun. Like I like to journal. In fact, I feel like this book has like a feeling of a journal, you know, and that's why I have Allison journaling, even though she makes fun of it. And so I think sometimes when you write out longhand, it slows you down. You can kind of, you know, and you know, when you're typing on the computer, you can always erase things. But when you're writing longhand, it slows you down and you can just get deeper into your thoughts. So, you know, sometimes when I have ideas, I have like, I'll keep a notebook where all my big ideas are for the book or like phrases that I really like or sentences I like, but I do like the manuscript writing on my computer because it's just, yeah, it's easy. I don't want to type in 300 pages when I'm done.
Yeah. I imagine it's a little daunting. I think we should talk about food. What do y'all think? So there was a lot of food.
A lot of food. Okay. I just want you guys to know that I went through, I don't know if you have this on like a website or something somewhere, Angela, but you have so much food. I had to make a note of it. So I'm going to go through and tell you how much food you wrote about.
Oh my God, this is hilarious.
Beer, almond milk latte, banana, lemon blueberry scone, margarita, guacamole, mimosa, mojito, almond latte, banana, orange cranberry scone, salad, sparkling water, Thai soup and spring rolls, almond milk latte again, raspberry oatmeal scone, Sauvignon Blanc, vodka cocktail, coffee, wine, champagne, coffee, tea, green tea, Thai food, almond milk latte, scone, salad, iced green tea, raw vegan chocolate cake brownie, crepes, vegan chocolate almond cheesecake, pad Thai zucchini noodles, almond milk latte, Sauvignon Blanc, chopped salad, herbal tea, Prosecco, brandy tea, coffee, tomka soup, Syrah, vegan gluten-free oatmeal raisin cookies, tea, coffee, wine, tea, champagne, rosé, latte, banana, root rose champagne, rosé, gazpacho soup, spring rolls, raw chocolate, coconut truffles, and tea. That's a lot of food for a not-so-thick book.
I haven't had any dinner. What I like about it is there's a lot of references to coffee, and most of us as attorneys and probably most professions do the coffee and alcohol combination, which to me, unfortunately, is kind of a reality of that. Yeah, so can you tell us why food played such a role in your book? Like what was the point of that?
Because I love food. I could write about food all the time. And I have to laugh at that list because there was even more food in this book before that got edited out. And the scene where she goes to the grocery store, that was a much longer scene. And my editor was like, nobody wants to go to the grocery store and like know like what every single thing she's buying. And I'm like, I want to know that. So isn't that fascinating for everyone? But apparently it's not. So yeah, that got condensed down to a paragraph or so, but, yeah, I love food. And I don't know, even when I'm reading, I'm like, what do I want to eat with this book? Or what do I want to drink with this book? And I've been running a book club, a women's fiction book club. We're at 9 years now. And it kind of just started out with, I hosted the first one because at the time my apartment had the biggest living room. And so they were like, we're just coming to your house. I was like, that's fine. And so I decided to make a themed dinner. And then ever since then, yeah, I've been hosting and I make a themed dinner. Sometimes we do potluck if it's, you know, too much. But yeah, I don't know. I love coming up with menus for books. And even the book I'm working on now, there's like way too much food that's getting cut out. Like, I don't know. I thought everyone wants to know every ingredient of a salad, but
I loved it. I love eating and drinking clearly as well. And so when I was going through, like, I thought that was so interesting and that made me just relate to her so much more. Like, I did want to know what she was eating and drinking every day. And it like really made me feel like I knew her. And so that's why I made the list of everything.
And it's a part of, I think what people eat too. I mean, it's a part of characterization when you're developing your character. I mean, you know, Allison, she's a rule follower. And she says, even in the beginning of the book, she's like, I have rules about what I eat. And this is my treat meal on the weekend. And then we kind of see like the slippery slide when she comes back from the spa and finds out, you know, Neil and Stacey are having a baby. She's just like, pizza on the sofa. Like, I don't care. You know, she's just,
how much can we all relate to that? I mean, in terms of, you know, how much do we all define our mornings by our cup of coffee, our, you know, our days by ending? It's relatable because we all go, kind of have these rituals and things that are really important to us and make us feel good. So that, I think that's really great when you have characters that relate to you in that respect. Because, and again, it's those experiences and those things that are relatable in characters. Are you so for you personally, what type of coffee are you? Are you a latte person? What are you in terms of that? Or is that something that you just created for her?
I mean, I created the almond milk latte. That's Allison's order. Like, I am a non-fat latte person.
So, oh, I just thought that was your drink. Okay, I'm glad you made a drink for Allison. Well, then, you know, you've got Starbucks in it and you've got the cauldron. And some people are diehard Starbucks fans and some people are really anti-Starbucks. Are you both? Is she both? How does that go?
You know, I love all coffee. So I'm really not. But I love Starbucks. You know, so the Starbucks, you know, in the Gold Coast on Division in Dearborn, that's, you know, her regular place, Allison's regular coffee place until she realizes she doesn't, you know, they know her almost too well there. And so she's like, I need to find someplace else to go where they don't know me. Yeah, I mean, I love it all. I mean, I love Starbucks. It's kind of, you know, it's just comforting to go somewhere and you know exactly what you're going to get when you get your coffee order. But then it's also fun to go to, you know, these small coffee houses, these independent places, because, you know, you discover new things.
And the cauldron doesn't actually exist in the Gold Coast, but where that Starbucks was at Clark and almost north, right by Latin, it closed and it has been replaced by a little Brazilian place called Pini Pico, which one of my friends opened. So it's right there in the old Starbucks spot right across from
me. I didn't realize that closed, but I totally can relate to having something that, you know, like, it's so comforting. I do. My husband always teases me because I'm like, he's like, you don't want to try this coffee place? I'm like, no, I'll just get the coffee that I know. Because I know it, you know. Are you, there was a lot of references to vegan food. Are you vegan? Is that something that you researched or are you?
I'm vegetarian. So I've been vegetarian. Oh my gosh. How many years? It might be 30 years now. I've been vegetarian for a very long time. And so, yeah, I'm not vegan because I just, cheese and I have a love affair.
don't we all have love affairs?
Yeah. If it wasn't for cheese, I would probably be vegan. but that's my treat meal on the weekend.
Your biggest cheerleader at the Chicago Marathon is your husband, Ray, who I know you met in Napa. And did you learn all about the wines? Because, you know, clearly wine played a big part in your book as well from all your frequent trips to Napa.
I think it's just probably, I mean, I would, you know, I like wine. I mean, Chicago, I will say, I mean, Chicago is kind of a hard drinking city. Like we just said, you know, you kind of, after work, that's where you kind of meet your friends and you know, have a drink before you kind of go home. But yeah, I definitely think the reason I had so many varieties of wine in the book is probably because I've been living out here and we belong to way too many wine clubs. Yeah, and we also got married in wine country. Yeah, it's like, it's an hour away and yeah, it's just, I don't know. I drink a lot of wine. I like wine. It's going to be in my books. And I actually have a book.
You're in good company. You're in good company. Don't worry about it.
Love it.
What is your next book about? Hints, please. I don't know if you're allowed to talk about that. Are you?
Okay. I can't talk too much about it yet. But it is, it's going to be in the same vein as this book. Only it will be a Chicagoan who ends up in San Francisco. So the next book takes place in San Francisco. And the main character is a lawyer.
So. Do you have any favorite authors or book recommendations that you might want to share with everyone who is watching?
Sure. I have so many favorite authors. I love, okay, so they're all going to be women's fiction authors. I'll just let you know now. So these are the authors that kind of inspired me to write. I would say Jane Green. Emily Giffen's books, Sophie Kinsella, she writes the fun rom-com books, Jen Lancaster, who is a Chicago writer. And then I would say one of the best books I've read this year was this book called Una Out of Order. Oh, last year I should say, Una Out of Order. And it's by Margarita Montemore and it's a debut novel. And it just combined a lot of different things, just like time travel, just contemporary women's fiction, family things, there's romance, it's just a very fun book.
Well, we're coming up to the end of our time together and this has been so much fun, but I do want to direct everybody to our website for the museum. It's www.americanwritersmuseum.org. And we've got virtual exhibits. We've also got an amazing gift shop. So I have to show you guys, this is my favorite mask. My American Writers Museum mask that I have on a gold chain and I wear it all the time. It's so comfortable. I sent it to all my clients the last holiday season and they love it. And to consider donating to support our write-in program, which supports youth education initiatives. And so with the current situation, like tonight, we're able to actually reach so many people outside of Chicago and a lot of students have taken virtual tours from all over the country. And here's my little one. Hi. So thank you guys so much for joining us. And Angela, do you have any last words?
Yes, I just want to say thank you for joining. I hope you enjoyed the recipe. And I hope you enjoyed the book. And you know, you can go to my website at www.angelaterry.com. And I plan to put up more recipes there. And I'm going to start putting up some book suggestions, I think, you guys. So thank you, audience. You gave me some ideas.
This was really inspiring. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your writing wisdom for all of us. And especially in Chicago, it was a very snowy gray day. So we appreciate any kind of light.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, American Writers Museum and
Olivia. We are going to watch out for the news in the next couple of days. Where are you going to post about your new book?
It will be everywhere, guys. So you can sign up to my newsletter. And so I will send an email out when I have news on that. And then also you can find me on Instagram at Angela Terry Author. I'm on Twitter at Angela Terry Lit or my Facebook author page.
Thank you so much, Angela. Have a great night, everybody.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, we'll chat with author Hanif Abdul-Raqib and illustrator Ashley Evans about their new Aretha Franklin picture book, Sing, Aretha, Sing! Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.